A quick message before we start. Lloyd Kaufman is going to be at the Starburst International Film Festival on Friday the 15th and Saturday the 16th of March at The Landing in Salford, here in the UK. The Starburst Film Festival is a great festival. There is a review of a past event that I went to on our website. Have a read. I met Caroline Munro there. It was amazing. Not just for the fact that I met Caroline Munro. The whole event is really, really good, and I would urge anybody to go to it. Tickets are still on sale, hopefully, if you're in the UK. Or maybe you're out of the UK and you're going to fly across for it. And you hear this in time and that you can visit. Myself and Tina are going to be there on the Saturday. So we're looking forward to meeting Lloyd. It'll be an absolute pleasure to meet him in the flesh. I'm sure I'll have to hold Tina back from him because she loves Lloyd. We all love Lloyd. Right, thank you for listening to this. Maybe see you at the Starburst Film Festival on the Saturday. On with the show. Hello and thank you for listening to episode 153 of 60 Minutes With. I'm Dave.
And I'm Tom.
And this is the very first of our remastered interview shows. Oh my word, Tom, we're going back in time.
We are way back. Way from a time machine.
We're going back. Actually, this first one, people would have seen already, hopefully, from the website or just by looking at their MP3 device of choice, that it's Lloyd Kaufman. This show, mate, can you believe, was released in February 2013.
Good grief. 6 years
ago. 6 years! We're here in February 2019, and it was 6 years ago. Incredible, eh?
That's scary.
Yeah, it is scary, isn't it? And we've said before, haven't we? You know, we did like 50 interview shows.
Yes.
But this was the one that sort of kicked off a whole load of other people.
Like, they were intermittent, mm-hmm. at best, like patchy, one here, one there, and then when after this one, the floodgates opened.
They did. We got to talk to some amazing people, didn't we? Holy hell!
Wow, God, yeah, and I'm sure you'll hear some of them as we remaster these ones that are coming out. But
yeah,
good. Yeah, this was the one.
This was the one. We were looking forward to it so much, and he didn't let us down. By a long chalk, that's for sure.
I remember sitting in this very room. It can't have been long after I moved to this house. Back when I had a desktop, this is how long ago it was. I was doing my desktop. Do you remember that old desktop I had?
Oh my God, I'd forgotten all about that. Yeah.
I think I had for 10 years that wouldn't die. And I was just, it was like, I went through wanting to get rid of it and like this and that. But then I've been not wanting to get rid of it because it was just like, how has this managed to survive? It died so many times and,
Oh God, yeah.
This kind of been long before its final death.
It did have like fits and starts, didn't it? It was prone to making some noises and then you'd kick it and it just kept chugging along. It was incredible.
Yeah, no, it did it. But yeah, I remember sitting on the edge of a bed or on a chair, just over where I'm looking, on my old desktop talking to Lloyd Kaufman. Crazy.
Oh yeah. It was a crazy start when we phoned him up because he gave us his mobile number. And we called him up, you know, at the agreed time. But he was running late because he was, you know, he's a busy guy. Still is.
Yeah. And I think that caused much flapping between us of like, oh, my God, we've got Lloyd Kaufman's mobile number.
I've still got it. It's still here. I've still got it, mate. If he hasn't changed his number.
Changed the moment he got off the,
yes. off the phone. It was just like a burner phone. he binned it as soon as he finished. But, yeah, we phoned him up and he was in a taxi in New York making his way back home. And he was so nice from the beginning, wasn't he? You know, he was instantly chatty, despite him, you know, obviously having a shitload of work to do. Mm. And here's two guys from the UK on the phone, geeking out a little bit that they're chatting to him. but he was really nice. We had a, you know, and again, the beauty of these interview shows that we've done is we talked so much, had so many great stories, like before what we put in the show and afterwards as well. You know, some of the people just stay on a lot longer, don't they, and talk about all sorts of stuff, which is really good. Some of the stories we could tell.
Yes,
but weren't allowed to. Yeah, so he gets home, we call him, I think we gave him like 20 minutes or so, and then we called him again. And again, he is so nice, So funny, mate. I mean,
Oh, he
he's
was hilarious.
absolute riot all the way through. And he's one of those guests. We didn't really have to say much, did we?
No, just let him go.
Yeah, and bloody hell, off he went. He did. There is one bit though when, and you'll hear this, listeners, when you get to it, he's going on and he's going about, oh, and they needed some ADR for one of the films, and he couldn't bring to mind what ADR is. You'll hear, if you're wondering why me and Tom didn't chip in and just say, additional dialogue recording, it's because I think we were both sat at either end of the country going, I don't want to correct Lloyd Kaufman
Yeah, I'm
or
not.
no, or presume to go, it's this, just because I was hoping he was going to think of it, which he doesn't in the end. But yeah, that's the reason that we're quiet on that one.
Absolutely dense.
Yeah, and my favorite bit though is when you ask him. Because we ask a lot of people this, and people hear it as we release these interview shows. And because people doing interviews, mate, people must be asked the same questions again and again, mustn't they?
Yeah.
And get fed up of it. So we thought, oh, well, we'll try and get something new out of them and ask them, what is it that you've not told people before?
Yeah.
And then when you asked him this, and he starts off with a regular answer. To do with his wife, and then he thinks of something else to do with his penis.
Only Lloyd Kaufman.
Only Lloyd Kaufman. So yeah, everybody listening to this, you've got a bit of information about Lloyd Kaufman's penis to look forward to. Yeah, where else do you get information like that? A couple of things we should say. I mean, I know these are titled remastered, a little bit cheeky, I guess. As in remastered, what we mean is because, of course, these interview shows are for the 80s Picture House. So we thought what we've done is we've re-listened to them, give you a fresh introduction at the start, and that's about it, really. We haven't tweaked the sound or done anything else.
Well, yeah, but it's not like this is the only place you can hear them now, unless you've saved all the episodes,
Well,
so.
exactly. Yeah. These are collector's items, mate, aren't they?
Your gold.
They are. We should sell them. We should have started a Patreon for them. That's what they
Oh,
should be.
yeah.
Yeah,
Let's do a Patreon.
So yeah, that's that. There's plenty more to come. I think what we're hoping to do, aren't we, mate, is every time we record the monthly Decade of Decadent show, is to get an interview show out as well.
Yeah. And as you say, there's over 50, so
Yeah,
whew.
there's plenty to go at, that's for
Yeah,
sure.
and we're not going to do them in any particular order, are we? Just like I've suggested one to do next time, I'm going to do that. So they're not going to be like chronological order, they're just going to be yeah.
Just yeah, as and when we like, aren't they? One last thing to point out as well, that when the interview ends, it'll be the theme music and that'll be it. So, how can we follow Lloyd Kaufman with anything that we could say? So yeah, there we are. Shall we let everybody go back to February 2013 now then, mate?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, right. Enjoy Lloyd. Now, unfortunately, we had some technical difficulties that I didn't notice until I came to edit. This meant that the first few minutes of the interview was not recorded properly. However, in the true spirit of Lloyd and Troma, this is not going to stop us getting the full product out to you in the end. So what we're going to do is we're going to join Lloyd as he's halfway through answering the first question, in which he was giving us a bit of background into the early days of Troma.
And we decided to try to give what we have to the movie-going public, but we wanted to keep our identities. And oh, that's great. I'll send this to Joyce. Keep our identities, and we bought into the auteur theory of cinema, which, as you know, is French, which means it's very stupid. But we bought into it anyway and felt that we should be in total control of the movies we make, and that the movies we make should reflect our retarded souls and personalities. And for 40 years, we have brought you movies like Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead, which played in three cinemas in the UK, at least three cinemas, maybe even six. And The Toxic Avenger, and Class of Nuke 'Em High, and The First Turn On, and I could go on and on and on, but I don't want to keep boring you with Tromeo and Juliet, and Terra Firma, Troma's War, Death by Temptation. I could go on and on, but I don't want to bore you.
When you formed Troma Entertainment,
you've got
back
snoring
in
out there. I hear one of your listeners. They're already outrage. That is a disgrace. Anyway, what were you going to say? Who's what?
That was Tom. When you founded Troma with Michael Hertz back in 1974, did you have any idea that it would still be going all these years later?
No. In fact, we assumed we would be out of business very swiftly, and we had to incorporate very quickly. And Michael Hertz, being the lawyer, decided he would try to. We had to incorporate and get an approved name from the New York State Secretary of State. And Michael tried to think of the most horrible-sounding name, figuring nobody else would want it, and that we would probably be out of business very soon. So it didn't matter what the name was. And lo and behold, 40 years later, I've got the amazing Tom and Dave interviewing me. Not just a great 40 years, but I've reached the peak. the zenith of my career.
Have you got anything special planned for the 40th anniversary next year?
Well, we were thinking about possibly the Queen might, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but the Queen and the sword on the shoulder, does that mean, maybe. Sir Lloyd, it sounds pretty good. I'm sure that something will happen in that direction. Exactly. They've already got, as my wife points out, they already have Lloyds of London. So that got a good laugh, that. My wife, by the way, is the New York State Film Commissioner, which is a very important... She said that'll get a good laugh, too. that is a very important position here because it brings a great amount of numbers of jobs to New York City, which, as you know, has been struck down by the good Lord with snowstorms and super hurricanes and needs help.
Yeah, you've had everything lately, I think, over there.
Yes, everything. Well, it's a city of sin, as you know, and God is, or Allah, or Buddha, somebody's punishing New York for all that, all those trauma movies that have been made for 40 years. No more Toxic Avengers. God is displeased. No more Romeo and Juliet. Romeo and Juliet, it was actually quite successful in the United Kingdom, what's his name? Kenneth Branagh was very kind regarding Romeo and Juliet at the Cannes Film Festival when Romeo and Juliet was presented, which I think was around 2001, 19, yes. Well, I know it was actually before then, around 1997.
Yeah.
And it's in iambic pentameter, and it was inspired by the Bard.
I think the only trouble with the movies over here is our censorship, and once the BBFC get hold of them.
Well, actually, what's the difficult part is not the censorship, because your censor is less corrupt than our Motion Picture Association of America. What is difficult in your country, as well as my country, is that the media, as well as the world of art, is controlled by a very small number of elite conglomerates, or people like Rupert Murdoch, or Mr. Saichi, Saichi, the guy who has all that stuff in the Tate Modern. How do you say that word? Saichi. Yeah, you know, there's a handful of very wealthy, powerful people who control the art and commerce of our industry, and so that is the problem. We are economically blacklisted. It's not a matter of censorship with us. It's a matter of the little independent distributors that used to bring you movies like Class of Newcomb High or Shaun of the Dead. They are gone, and all you have left are the giant conglomerates or the vassals of said giant conglomerates. So it becomes a real difficulty getting to the public. And so that is really the issue, and that is true the world over. The big international purveyors of baby food entertainment control pretty much all that we see and hear and smell and listen to and watch. And that is why if you want to be a successful independent movie maker and make money, you have to make independent movies that have no political or sociological content of any change the world meaning. You can have political and sociological content that would be appropriate 50 years ago so that you take no risk. But otherwise, you're dead. You're shoved down into the underground like a trauma. And you exist because you have fans or that the public makes an effort, as you, Dave and Tom, have done. You make an effort to find trauma and to pay attention. But otherwise, that is the issue. It isn't really the censorship.
Yeah, I think trauma's fans are very loyal as well, aren't they? Over the years, you know, once you've discovered trauma movies, that's
well, it. We've been kept alive really by word of mouth by our fans. We've been able to meet our payroll and keep making movies and be totally unknown at the same time. And it's all thanks to our fans who have passed the word and who have supported us. In fact, right now, our fans around the world are supporting Occupy Cannes, which is a documentary we are going to make at the Cannes Film Festival. And in fact, we have received enough money. We still have to get more, but we have enough to at least start the project, and we hope that we'll achieve our goal on Indiegogo. But Occupy Cannes will be a very interesting and shite-disturbing documentary that will follow our excellent All the Love You Can documentary made back in 2001. This Occupy Cannes will be an examination of, it'll be sort of a colonoscopy of the Cannes Film Festival. Because we will be there on the inside. We will be there as purveyors of our latest film, Return to Newcombe High. And we will be able to observe the Cannes Film Festival as if we were doing a colonoscopy. So we need help. We need our British fans to chip in a few pounds. We need about $50,000, which I think is in British pounds, probably 12 pounds. based on the value of the dollar these days. So, but we do need help. If you know, we had 10,000 fans each giving £2, that would be great. So, anybody who can give us some money to help us get to Cannes, and we want to also organize a crowd of 500 people, which I think we can do because of the magic of the internet and my Twitter and all that kind of stuff. I think we can get 500 people and put on some really interesting street theater and protest movement the way it was in 1968 when there was a serious student rebellion against the dominance of the big thumb of authority.
Yeah, well, we'll put up all the details for that on our website when we post a podcast. So,
That's very nice of you. Thank you. So, it's Indiegogo / Occupy Cannes or something like that. Anyway, if you go to Indiegogo and type in Occupy Cannes, it's very easy to find the trauma and Occupy Cannes, and we really would appreciate any help we can get. I think we have about 2 weeks left to get to our $50,000 budget. By the way, All the Love You Can is available for free if you want to see what the first documentary was like. All the Love You Can, C-A-N-N-E-S, is on our YouTube movie channel, and it's free. It costs nothing. And we have about 250 other movies that are available to our fans for free, including Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead, and Troma's War, and Tromeo and Juliet, and all the classics.
I've already watched a few on there. It's a good thing you're doing that, picking them all up. So, on the subject of Poultrygeist, recently watched the documentaries on that Blu-ray and the DVD of Citizen Toxie. They are just stunning, like fly-on-the-wall documentaries about filmmaking. They really are. But it made me wonder, what is the best and worst experience you've had directing a film?
Well, there's never been a best experience because it's horrible making a trauma movie, and I think that becomes quite apparent in the
documentary.
It's awful. But that's why the making of that's why the Occupy Can documentary is going to be really interesting, because it will be an unvarnished truth. It will be truth 24 frames a second, as Jean-Luc Godard used to say. And as far as the worst experience, probably on the Toxic Avenger, because we had a stunt that went wrong. We hired a very well-respected team of stunt people and car crash people. We did not try to save any money there. We hired people with Hollywood credits. And the guy who put in the roll bar for the car, this car was supposed to do a flip. The guy who put in the roll bar for the car didn't anchor it to the body of the car. Instead, he just screwed it into the floor of the car. So when the car tipped over, when the car went and landed on its ceiling, when it landed on its roof, the roll bar punched through the floor of the car like wet, like a straw through a wet bag when you carry coffee. And the car folded like an accordion. Of course, there was a driver inside who was not too pleased with the result. But luckily, he didn't get hurt. But I was on one of the cameras, and seeing it and seeing the car crumple like an accordion due to the criminal negligence of Hollywood stuntmen and so-called experts, that was a horrifying experience. Luckily, the car crumpled on the passenger side and the driver's side, because that's where it hit. So the driver wasn't, he was shaken up but not injured in any way. But for all we knew, he was going to be dead, you know, as we saw it happen. And as we approached the car, you know, we at first there was like silence, and we figured that we'd be selling shoes or maybe hats and several rope. But then we heard some little grunts and groans, and the driver was fine. But anytime anyone asked me about the, and it hasn't happened often, but occasionally somebody, once somebody asked me about the guy who was hired to prepare the car for the flip, and indeed I spoke the truth when I was asked to give a reference. But usually if somebody asks me for a reference for someone who's worked for us, either I'll give a great reference or I will just ignore it. I'll never will I badmouth anyone who's worked for us, unless it's a matter of safety, in which case I will tell the truth.
Mm-hmm. My next question. Last year, I don't know if you ever, company Arrow Film in the UK, they put out Class of Newcombe High on Blu-ray and Surf Nazis Must Die in Combat Shock on DVD, and they did some just really beautiful releases with reversible sleeves and booklets and just packed full of extras, what these films deserve. I was just wondering if you knew if there are any plans to work again with Arrow in the near future?
Of course. Arrow is a wonderful company. Would be nice to see if they're... I think they're, if I'm not mistaken, somebody... I don't know if it's Arrow or somebody, I think, acquired the rights to Father's Day, our more recent production. But I'm not sure who it was. I don't handle the sales, but I have had the pleasure of watching Arrow releases of Poultrygeist Night of the Chicken Dead. It is magnificent. It is absolutely clucking good. It's it's the foul movement. It is it's absolutely amazing. It's really beautiful. It's really good. It has very good word of beak too.
We caught you, didn't we? You've been working on a movie today. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
Yes. I think it's our best movie ever, and it's going to be an event film, Return to Newcombe High.
Uh-huh.
It's a revisiting of Class of Newcombe High, an American company called STARZ, STARZ, which is actually it was a division of one of the devil worshipping international media conglomerates, but it has been spun off onto its own since they made the deal with us, probably because the devil worshipping international media conglomerate was pissed off that Starz was doing a business with Troma. But in any event, they decided they wanted us to make kind of a revisiting of Return to Nukem High, which we have done. It's in two volumes, like Kill Bill. So there's Return to Nukem High Volume 1, which we're currently doing the sound design. We have Silver Sound, a very prominent sound house, doing the sound work on the sound design. We just came from a session of ADR, which is post-syncing, doing some of the dialogue and off-screen lines. I don't know what ADR stands for. I can never remember what it stands for, ADR. But it's something to do with the... if you can't understand a line that was photographed on location, you dub it in a studio. It's very expensive. But I never can remember what it's some ADR. I don't know what it stands for, but some kind of recording. Anyway, we've been doing that and the off-screen lines and various little anything related to dialogue that needs to be touched up. And then next week we start the real sound design and color correction. And then in about 2 weeks we'll have the final film and we'll lose more money. I mean, we'll send it to you guys.
So how long has it taken to get to this point, filming?
That's a very good question. It's gone pretty fast for us, actually. We started writing this script 2 years ago. So we will have, and we've pretty much finished, we have a little bit of filming to do on Volume 2. But I would guess by the summer, I would guess it's about a three-year journey from inception to the final solution.
Wow, that's quite a while.
It's not actually for us, for me, when I direct a film, it takes me a long time. But Father's Day, which we produced this year, or last year, I guess, last year, we had competent directors, and they only took, I think they took less than a year to do it, from the inception to the final solution.
Mm-hmm. On the subject of Father's Day, I don't know if it was for sure, but the last time we were in the UK was at the Prince Charles Cinema for a Troma marathon. That was at Toxie and Class of Nukem High. Are there any plans
to
come?
There was a big mix-up there because the people misunderstood and they thought it was going to be Farter's Day. And that's why the theater was packed. We had a overflowing, we had to turn people away. They didn't know it was a Troma movie. But it was too late because we had captured we really had to turn people away from both Class of Nukem High and Father's Day. But it was not Farter's Day, but people stayed anyway and enjoyed Father's Day.
Is there any chance of you coming back with Return to Nukem High? Because I'd love to go, whether it's that just that or a marathon or any form.
Well, I'm hoping this summer. I've got, it looks like there's going to be a big retrospective in Stockholm of some of Troma's movies that I have had the privilege to direct. And if that's true, then I should be able to swing by Paris and London, and we'll have another event during the summer. I can't afford to come there on my own. We are destitute. We're going to go to Cannes, but the fans are helping us go, and that will clean us out as far as any ability to go anywhere. Mm. So we need the fans to help us with Indiegogo, and hopefully this retrospective in Stockholm will get me to Europe, and then I can go from there to Paris and London, because Prince Charles doesn't have the funds to bring me there.
All right, okay.
You've done lots of things in your career. Writing, directing, producing, acting. Is there any particular one that you enjoy more than the other?
they're all extremely stressful, but they're all educational. And I've acted in a couple of British films not too long ago, three or four of them. I think you have to look on my IMDb because I can't. There's one about spiders, a musical that looked really interesting. Something to do with spiders, and it was terrific. I just can't remember the name of it. It had the word spider in the title. And two or three other ones that looked really, really good. And I do that so that we can try to help independent filmmakers. If I'm in a movie, the fans will support, you know, our fans, as you know, are very aggressive and hardworking, and they pretty much anything I'm in, our fans will buy, and or anything to do with Troma, our fans will support all six of our fans, and they. So if I'm in a film, it'll help the independent filmmaker. And what's more important is that at least with the American filmmakers, if they get me, then they can go to the guy. They can go to Kane Hodder and say, "Hey, Lloyd Kaufman's in the movie," and you know, it gives them some gravitas, gives them some credibility, because there's, you know, a real actor doesn't want to take a chance on some unknown. But if I'm in the film, then they realize, well, if Lloyd is in it, there must be some reason to be in the film. You know, and the filmmaker probably is okay, so it helps the filmmaker. Well, you go really to good. My. You have IMDb in the UK.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good. They. You'll see. I've been in about 200 films, and it's also educational because I'm a, as my name implies, I'm a cellular Lloyd person, and I don't know much about the fast world of digital cinema. So when I'm in these movies, I was in one last week. Called what the hell was it called? Apocalypse Kiss, and I play the President of the United States. It was fascinating. I filmed behind the scenes, and because it was really interesting how these guys they're making a feature-length film for. Return to Nukem High was about $800,000 for both volumes. Which is very little. That's about 1% of a Hollywood movie. Mm-hmm. But these guys are made a movie. They're making a movie for $46,000, which is 10% of our movie. So and also I filmed behind the scenes their set. They built a rocket ship, as opposed to fish and rocket ships. They built a rocket ship for like $150, and it was terrific. The set was amazing, with a green screen inserted into it, and using pieces of crap you find around a junkyard, and the thing looks like the interior of a rocket ship. At any rate, I've been able to film behind the scenes of many of these movies I've acted in. Recently I was in James Gunn's movie Super, which is a big time movie with Ellen Page and Rainn Wilson and Kevin Bacon and bunch of other stars, and I filmed behind the scenes, and it was interesting to see that movie being made. And Mother's Day remake of Mother's Day, which was a $20 or $30 million movie by Brett Ratner's company, filmed behind the scenes there. And I make little lessons out of these things. I learn about the world of digital filmmaking, but B, I make lessons and edit them. We edit them, and they're up online. I put them up online. Troma has, in addition to a free movie channel on YouTube, Troma has a free educational channel called Your Own Channel, which puts up lessons about filmmaking, how to make movies, sort of lessons, secrets that Troma and I have learned over the 40 years, how to make blood, how to make vomit, interview with Trey Parker and Matt Stone, interview with Eli Roth, interview with Stan Lee, interview with George Romero, how to make your own dolly how to make your own, how to be make a movie without any crew, stuff like that. And it's all up on, I put up a lesson every week on your own channel, and it's all free.
That's really why
the fans need to help us out with our Indiegogo project, Occupy Can, because we can't give away our movies for free. We can't put on Troma Dance Film Festival for free. We can't make movies for our fans that don't make any money back. We need our fans to help us. Otherwise,
exactly.
We can't keep doing it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we have to make Josie and the Pussycat. Actually, that wasn't a bad movie. I take it back. We'll have to make Transformers Part 8.
Oh, no.
So I guess the advent of the internet and like the digital age has had some positives as well as some negatives for Troma then?
I would say Troma would not be here were it not for the ether, the internet. We are here because our fans can talk to us and guide us, and we can talk to them and let them know that I'm going to be in Kansas City on February 25th and Seattle on February 26th, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's a very valuable democratic medium, and it's the only and last democratic medium.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the major reason why Troma has been able to continue our work and not have to fold up our tent, because the rest of the industry, the rest of the media, is all owned by Rupert Murdoch and the other experts at phone hacking. The internet is a level playing field, and if you have something good or something that people want to see, you can prosper. Not prosper, but you can get people's attention. And the Troma movies get good word of mouth, and the internet is how the fans are able to communicate with each other and say, hey, Arrow has a really good Blu-ray of Poultrygeist, The Night of the Chicken Dead out there, or Combat Shock, and that's how people know we're around. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. But the bad guys are down in Washington, D.C., and I'm sure they're doing it in your... Although your country is a lot better. The British government versus the internet is much more, I think, up-to-date. The American government still believes that net neutrality on the internet is a problem, and that they're buying the Hollywood conglomerates. They're buying Rupert Murdoch and the they're not the international conglomerates' argument that net neutrality leads to copyright infringement and pornography, which is the same argument the establishment used against the VHS cassette when it came out.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The establishment will try to destroy any innovation and take it over. They don't innovate. They never innovate, but they will try to destroy or fuck up, excuse my language, internet. They will try to they will try to throw a monkey wrench into the works of any innovation so that they can then take it over. And that's why they're screaming about copyright. The copyright laws of the United States and Europe are outdated, and they should not be. They should be totally overhauled, so that there can be file sharing. There should be file sharing. And my book, "Sell Your Own Damn Movie," which is available in the UK, "Sell Your Own Damn Movie." You can get it in whatever stores are there, and I know that. Forbidden Planet has it, but I believe that your bookstores, if there are any left, will have to sell your own damn movie. And in that book, I explain very beautifully that file sharing is a great help to any artist who does not wish to work for Rupert Murdoch. And I don't mean to single out Rupert Murdoch. Sony is not a person, and Viacom is not a person, because Sumner Redstone is chairman of the board of Viacom, and I don't think he is a person. The other giant conglomerates are not really people, so I keep talking about Murdoch. And also, he's kind of British-ish, even though he's Australian. He's left a giant footprint in your fine country. But that's the issue. the copyright laws should be totally revamped so that you can have file sharing, because file sharing is great for the independent artist and the consumer alike.
Oh, that's good.
I think so.
The good thing about yourself and like Troma in general as well is because you'll take the time to interact with your fans as well, which not many of the other studios do whatsoever.
Well, the fans have guided us. The fans were the ones who told us to set up a website long ago. We were the first American movie studio to have a website. And I was online with the fans back in when there was something called CompuServe, which was before AOL, it was a long time ago. The fans guided me. The fans have told us to go into DVD. I had been an expert on VD, and it was not the big job to change the station, you know, change our letterhead and just add the D in front of it. The fans were the ones who told us to go into file sharing, and they kind of guide us. They also helped us with the return to Nukem High. The fans told me things they wanted to see or not see. And not only that, but the fans are responsible. Most of the crew most of the cast and crew of Return to Nukem High are in fact fans.
Wow.
You know, because the internet was allowed us to reach out to fans and saying, if you would like to be in a Troma movie, if you would like to sleep on the floor and learn how to defecate in a paper bag, come and be in Return to Nukem High, and we will show you the way. And the fans were really, it was very, when you see the event film, the volume one and volume two of Return to Nukem High, you'll be pretty impressed. It's a very ambitious looking film. It looks like it. If Return to Nukem High volume one and volume two were made in the mainstream, it would have to cost $30 million, $50 million. There are thousands of people in it, and it's only thanks to the fans supporting it, not with money, but with their work, with their appearance, and with their... Literally, about 80 of us lived in a funeral home, in an abandoned funeral home in Niagara Falls, New York, for about 2 months, sleeping on the floor, just devoting our lives to shooting this movie, and pre-production, the writing has been very much fan propelled, and as has the post-production. So the fans are very, very much involved in the movie, and not just the fans, and not just the fans, but the air conditioners too are very important.
When was the decision made to make Return to Nukem High two volumes? Because when I first heard about it, I'm sure it was just one. When did that happen, and why?
Well, it was we wanted it to be an event film from the start, so it was pretty much. I guess we just didn't talk about it in case we didn't go that way. But there are so many. The nice thing about the digital revolution is that you don't need money anymore to make a movie. You can make a movie. Troma releases, my partner and I, Michael Herz and I, executive produced, which means we gave some money to a film called Mr. Bricks, a heavy metal murder musical. It's a wonderful film, directed by Travis Campbell, who's our in-house editor. And that movie cost the whole budget of that movie. It's a feature-length movie, was under $5 million. So, you can make your own damn movie for nothing. So with Return to Nukem High, obviously we couldn't do that, but we decided that it had to be because of being able, there's so many movies out there, thousands now, thousands. Mm-hmm. How do we make our movie pop out of the pack? Poltergeist is my best movie, right? Nobody's heard of it. It lost every penny, not every penny, but I would say it's lost 95% of its money, most of which was my wife's retirement fund. I told her she was investing in Transformers Part 6, so keep that under your hat. She hasn't been told yet that her retirement, that she will be living in a refrigerator carton for the rest of her life. But we were thinking, well, let's try to figure out how do we make Return to Nukem High pop out of the pack? How do we make it, give it some more attention? And we thought, well, Kill Bill got a lot of attention because it was an event film and in two volumes. So we did that with Return to Nukem High. And I think it's going to be really terrific. It is an epic. I am quite certain that it is our best work, Troma's best work in 40 years. And I think you will agree. It's also probably, in terms of content, probably the most controversial, just in terms of it being a little ahead of its. Well, most of our movies, from the point of view of themes and sociological meaning, are way ahead of their times.
So when this part two is tied up, then how far in advance have you planned the films?
We will take a volume. It's not part. It's volume one. You can watch them as a unit too. They work very nicely as a unit, as separate units. But volume one will be finished in time for the Cannes Film Festival. It will have its world premiere at Cannes, and that's what the documentary Occupy Cannes will be filmed. That's why I say the Occupy Cannes documentary will be like a colonoscopy of Cannes, because you'll be seeing Cannes from the inside out rather than just people going up the red carpet, which is all you're going to get from the BBC and the American TV stations. You know, so. Volume 2, I don't think, will be ready until the summer.
Yeah.
That would be my guess. We still have a little filming on Volume 2, but we've started editing, and it looks terrific.
Have you got any plans for carrying on with some of the other franchises that you've done in the past?
Well, we've been trying for 5 years now. We're up to, it's been about 5 years we've been writing Toxic Event. Well, not 5 years, since it's getting on 4 years. Toxic Avenger Part 5, The Toxic Twins. We've been writing that for we're up to a fourth year on that. We haven't got a script that I feel will please you, Tom and Dave. And we're still trying to come up with what something we can really believe in. Otherwise, it's not worth making. You know, we don't. If we made money with these movies, fine. But since we don't make any money, and our movies are totally ignored by the mainstream, except for you guys, there's no purpose in making a movie that's about a shark and an octopus, unless it's something we really believe in.
Yeah, because I thought Part 4 was brilliant. I think that's probably my favorite one of them. And I believe you're not too happy on Parts 2 and 3, are you?
Well, you know, they're good films, but I compromised and I let my guard down for a while. But they're still good. We have people, we've got fans who say Part 2 is their favorite version, you know? So, the Toxie in Japan, there are people who love that one the best. I don't think anybody thinks Part 3 is the best. But I think it's pretty good. I think it's got a great message. It came out against the yuppies, and we were way ahead of the Occupy movement. Basically, Part 3 is the last temptation of Toxie is an Occupy London kind of a movie, and many years ago. I agree with you. Citizen Toxie is the best Toxic Avenger movie by far.
Yeah.
It's the most original. It's the most courageous, and I think the most entertaining. Certainly the most controversial. But Part 5, we just haven't been able quite yet to come up with with a really good script, and I'm going back to work on it now that I've finished the Return to Nukem High scripts, movies, rather. Those scripts wrote themselves. They were easy. You know, it was interesting. Though, for some reason, I was able to get something that you guys would like pretty fast, but it still took 3 years from start to finish. But with Toxie, I'm having a lot of trouble getting something that I feel would really be true to us.
Yeah, Toxie's so well loved with Troma fans. Had you any idea when you made the first one how huge he would take off?
Yes, I always, every time I make a movie, I believe it is a wonderful film, and that in a fair world, it would take off. But the and in a fair world, Poltergeist should have made huge amounts of money. Mm-hmm. People love that film, just nobody knows about it, and so I'm not surprised. They're remaking Nukem High, Mother's Day, Toxic Avenger is being remade for over $100 million. They signed and paid us, but they haven't made it yet. But Mother's Day was remade for a lot of money, and now they want to remake. Somebody wants to remake Poltergeist. They just haven't offered us a decent license fee, and there's no reason to let anyone remake it unless we get some money so we can keep making movies.
I'm gonna slot in a question from a listener now, if that's all right.
Sure. Hold on one second, please.
Yeah.
I've got about. Is it 10 minutes enough? 10 minutes more? Is that okay?
That would be brilliant, Lloyd. Thank you very much.
Yeah, oh, my pleasure. Sure. No, this is a great interview.
This one is from my fiance as well. And she asks, well, it's a two-part question. She said, you've had such a varied and long career in film. Have you ever been tempted to do one big Hollywood movie? And the second part of the question is, she knows with your background about musicals, she would like to know what your favorite musical is.
They're both very good questions. What was the first question? I took a lot of acid in the 60s. So I...
The first part was, have you ever been tempted to do one big Hollywood movie?
I can't say that I have. I've never... The scripts that I get... I've been offered scripts and jobs to direct movies, but I've never gotten a good script from anybody, and I've never been offered any decent money. So, I've been offered like $50,000 to direct crappy movies. I would direct a movie for free if there were a really great script. Mm-hmm. But I have not been offered such. I've been offered really boring, not boring, but really derivative exploitation movies, and they give me $50,000 for a month's work. But I don't want to do that because the fans then will be very upset, and I $50,000 is nothing. If someone offered me a big fee, I would do it in a minute, because Troma has got no money and it would help us make another movie. As far as a giant $100 million movie, I have no interest in that. I think if I were offered $100 million, I would take $1 million and make a bigger Troma movie, because maybe I could get a writer who is better than I and the people I work with, and also I could perhaps get slightly better acting. Although Return to Nukem High is an amazing cast. It's the best cast we've ever had, and as good as any Hollywood cast. $100 million budget, I'd spend $1 million on a film for me, and then I would give $99 million in pieces of $500,000 to individual filmmakers around the world, probably to mainly in Africa and the Middle East, and mainly to women and people who are not white and not Jewish. I would do it that way, and I know that we would have what we would have. 200 very good, almost 200 independent movies at $500,000 a piece, and maybe out of those 200 movies we'd get two masterpieces. Mm-hmm. If we were lucky. I think that would be better than making a $100 million movie.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's my solution. That's politically correct solution to the profligacy of our values in publications like The Sun and the BAFTA Awards and the Oscars, and that promote $100 million movies and promote excess and red carpets and 50,000 pound dresses that women are wearing, and in some cases men are wearing. I believe that art should not be a product of glamour and money, but should come from the heart, and there's no reason to spend a king's ransom on such profligacy, so you will end up buried under a parking lot like Richard III. Is it true that Rupert Murdoch bought Richard III?
It wouldn't surprise me.
It would not be the first government leader that he has bought, I believe.
At any rate,
back to the second question of your fiancé. Why is she marrying you? I mean, no. The second question was about musicals. My favorite musical of all time is Pal Joey. It's very gay, and it was from the John O'Hara short story, very depressing, dark short story, wonderful musical, Pal Joey. There was a very bad movie made out of it with Frank Sinatra, but it is a wonderful, it's a great musical with words and lyrics, and I'm sorry, with lyrics and music by Lorenz Hart and Richard Rogers. And I would, if anybody can get to see Pal Joey, you should see it. There was a recent revival in New York that where they rewrote they missed it, they didn't get it, and they fucked it all up. But it's my favorite.
Oh, thank you.
What's your wife's favorite? Does she have a favorite musical?
Hers is West Side Story.
Well, that is a great. She has a great taste, she's probably in the fullness of time. I guess West Side Story probably has a bigger influence on the world of art than Pal Joey, but. Pal Joey, because it's so dark. Well, West Side Story was pretty dark. And it's a Romeo and Juliet, of course, inspired musical. So has your wife seen Romeo and Juliet?
She hasn't seen that one yet. She's seen most of the trauma ones, but...
Well, check out Romeo and Juliet, because you will see that West Side Story and Romeo and Juliet are not that far apart.
Uh-huh. I think that may be tonight's film now, then.
Yes, I think you'll have a good time with it. It's free, I think, on YouTube.
Right, well, that's definitely tonight's film.
I think most of our, including Poultrygeist, most of our best movies are free, including the behind the scenes. All the Love You Can, Poultry in Motion, Apocalypse Soon, you know, the behind the scenes documentaries. It's all free on Troma's YouTube movie channel. There is also a YouTube channel for that Troma, every day we put up some kind of short subject or something. So we have, I think, three YouTube channels, all of which are free. One is for feature-length movies, one is for the film school called Your Own Channel, and one is just a daily statement of some sort. Sometimes it's a film clip, sometimes I talk about an issue like gun control, and I did one recently on the gun control issues. And sometimes it's just a goofy short piece that Troma has made.
Okay, we always like to finish our interviews by asking our guests to reveal something to the listeners that they probably have never heard before. So is there anything you can tell us about yourself that might surprise us?
Yes. I have been married to the same woman for 40 years, almost 40 years. If you've seen my movies, that might surprise you. And she was a debutante, a Southern Belle, and is now the New York State Film Commissioner, which means for 20 years that she's had this job for almost 20 years. She's appointed by the governor of the state of New York, and she is a citizen of the mainstream and yet has been able to have a career in spite of Nymphoid Barbarian in Dinosaur Hell, or Teen Ape and the Nazi Apocalypse. In spite of Terra Firma, she's been able to maintain a career. And my partner, Michael Herz, has also been married to the same woman for over 40 years. Not to my wife. He's been married to his own same woman for more than 40 years. He's been married longer than I have. and we have been partners for 4 years. So that's a in the film industry, that is I don't think any film studio heads have been able to say that. So that might be kind of surprising. And I have a penis that is, when fully erect, is more than 2.5 inches. I don't think I have I do not think I have revealed that fact to any not even Derek Malcolm knows that.
That was brilliant, and we thank you so much for your time, Lloyd. And
you got me at the height of my manic depressive curve. I'm now going to be retreating into a closet and start weeping.
We will definitely put up the links to everything that you've talked about onto our website. And
okay,
of course,
well, thanks again. Thanks so much for being interested in trauma and independent art, because we are, to some extent, the last person standing, although we're the last mutant standing. So.
Well, long may you continue
so
as well.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much, Lloyd.
Yes,
thank you, Lloyd.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Tom. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Of evil.